Top that, Jim.
No way. Well, it's kind of hard to talk to this group about inner wisdom. It's kind of like, you know, preaching to the choir, because I think all of us understand about inner wisdom. And what I'd like to do today is just talk about it a little while, and then maybe ask you if you have any comments or additions, you know, things that, because, you know, to cover the subject would take 2 or 3 days and not just a few minutes. So I think everybody has experienced at one time or another getting little hints or nudges from somewhere when trying to make important decisions or trying to solve personal problems or maybe just trying to decide where to go to lunch today. In our culture, great emphasis is put on using a rational, scientific, and methodical approach to making decisions, to problem solving, decisions about which path to take when you're faced with 2 or more competing alternatives. We're urged to gather evidence and guidance from multiple sources, carefully weigh the alternatives, and then select the best one, or perhaps the least expensive, or the one that appears to be objectively easier based on all of that evidence. And that's a reasonable way to go about it. But these hints or nudges that we get are quite often just put aside as being unreasonable or untrustworthy. And I want to suggest that we can identify this guidance that comes from a source within ourselves, our inner wisdom, and learn to trust it to operate to our own benefit. Now, I believe, I think everybody would agree with this, that each of us has that source of information and understanding which is beyond our conscious minds, but it can be contacted by quieting the mind and going within. In addition to the hints and nudges that I mentioned, inner wisdom manifests itself through emotions, hunches, gut feelings, or messages from that still small voice. It can be heard over the din of everyday life. Now, the still small voice shouldn't be confused with that much louder, more strident and snarly voice of your inner critic. I think everybody will recognize that character. That's the inner critic often repeats what's been installed in our consciousness by parents and teachers and newscasters and religious leaders and Facebook friends, casual acquaintances, and others who fill your head with limitations, even if they mean well. I got a message on Facebook yesterday that said, "Don't forget that Sunday is the day we go back to, you know, that the time changes." And so I said, "That can't be." And I got my calendar and looked, and sure enough, 2 calendars say it's going to be the 1st of November, you know, not today. So I don't know if inner wisdom would bring you to that conclusion or not. But anyhow, the inner critic delights in telling us that we're not good enough, that we're not smart enough to do what we've started to do. It goes over the errors or poor judgments that we may have made, missed opportunities and unfortunate life choices or career choices, and it keeps it up. And sometimes it gets pretty loud. Now, I've talked here about ways to deal with the inner critic, so I'm not going to talk about that today, except to say that fortunately, inner wisdom can be used to silence the inner critic and bring peace and calm to daily life. It's like I sometimes say to the commercials on television, you know, that are urging us to get those mortgages, you know, when Fred comes out and walks around and says, get a mortgage. What do they call this? I can't think of it. Not a reverse mortgage. It is a reverse mortgage. That's the one. That's the one Fred Thompson tells us to get. And so I usually say, "Put a sock in it, Fred," but he never does. Well, in our culture, we're not used to listening to inner wisdom or taking action based on what that tells us. The scientific method doesn't encourage or promote listening to your inner wisdom. Consequently, intuitive guidance is often not considered to be reliable or trustworthy. It's so easy to doubt or second-guess intuitive judgment that we're often unwilling to even tell others about it or even to mention it. So we often learn to keep our mouth shut when we know things without knowing how we know. We're so rationally oriented and logically trained that when inner wisdom tries to get our attention, we tend to dismiss the information or ignore it completely. Other names by which inner wisdom is known include intuition, inner knowledge, inner knowing, sixth sense, gut feelings, and sometimes instinct. Now, I think intuition is the closest synonym. Many writers have developed ideas about how to contact inner wisdom, intuition, and they generally appear to be along the same lines. I like to say that inner wisdom is the bigger category, and those others are like subcategories within it. That's, you know, if you don't like that, why, it's okay. That's just the way I think about it. Any of those things could be misunderstood, or misconstrued, or twisted into concepts that don't reflect our real reality. On the other hand, inner wisdom is entirely personal and doesn't depend on any external influences or situations. Inner wisdom appears most often, I think, as a sensory experience. That's like the gut feeling. You know, when something is, you think is going to go wrong, and you begin a little tightness in the belly. You know, say, ah, what's happening here? Most of the synonyms I just mentioned also have a sensory quality. Sometimes we hear people say, I just felt it in my bones, or he has a nose for that, or it came to me in a flash. And these terms indicate an immediate appreciation by the mind without reasoning. Dreams can be included in these too, because they are certainly sensory experiences. But where does our inner wisdom come from? We believe that it's based on our sensory experiences that we have stored away, and our interpretations of those that we've stored away in the subconscious, so they're not available just all the time. And that's probably a pretty good thing. Because there's an awful lot of them. Mine are beginning to fall out. I can't remember sometimes where I was going when I stood up from my chair. Well, this source is often called the higher self or your own inner spirit. Many people believe that every person has one or more spirit guides who will give advice, comfort, and protection in the form of warnings. Then many also believe that we're attended by guardian angels whose role is different from spirit guides. Their role is protecting the people that they are guarding. Now, you can access your inner wisdom, your intuition, without necessarily relying on or even believing in spirit guides or guardian angels. But it doesn't hurt to suspend your disbelief while asking your higher self for information and advice. Personally, I've come to accept the notion that I have both spirit guides and guardian angels somewhere, though I don't always take notice of them. Sometimes you can kind of ignore them, and that's maybe good, maybe not. I don't take notice of them until I have been kept from some terrible situation that I had no reasonable way to avoid. And then, you know, you say, well, boy, I'm sure glad that happened. But often you don't attribute it to anybody or anything. So let me turn for a minute to ways to access inner wisdom or intuition and suggest that since I believe that everybody has inner wisdom or intuition, we might all want to try it out and see. Unless, you know, I'm sure that most of you do this anyway in this outfit. Inner wisdom comes in large part from analyzing what the five physical senses have detected, and then we put that in that unconscious storage. And we also, I think we have a connection to what might be called the universal consciousness, you know, the thing that everybody shares in, and we can tap into that. In all the resources that I consulted in getting ready for this talk, the first step in developing your intuition was said to be something like quiet your mind. Now, not only is it good to move away from the many necessary but intrusive activities of daily life, and you want to avoid waking the inner critic up as much as you can. Well, you can always tell them to hush, but sometimes that's hard to... But the inner critic is us, anyway, and so if you don't like to tell yourself to shut up, why? You may want to find out that you're listening to it too much. Well, for most of us, quieting the mind usually means or approaches meditation. And a brief meditation before starting will help you get ready. And meditators may find it easier to access inner wisdom since they've had experience in quieting the mind. If you're going to listen to your inner wisdom, you have to pay attention to it. The meditative period doesn't have to be very long. 5 minutes may be enough. Tell the inner critic to buzz off and relax into the experience of just watching your breath. If thoughts intrude, let them float in and out like clouds and just return to your breath. Dr. Judith Orloff, who some of you have, I'm sure you've read her books, she says you can call this meditation if you want to, but it's ultimately just a wonderful way of stilling your mind. Here are the components that will provide a fertile breeding ground. This is a quote, and I didn't put down who it's a quote from, so I'm sorry about that. I'll fix that. But here are the components that will provide a fertile breeding ground for psi, PSI. Consistent place and posture, relaxation, a clear mind, sacred space, belief, intention, and an open heart. Now, there are at least two different aspects of inner wisdom that can appear, and there may be many more than two, but I won't talk about two. Since this is my talk, I can cherry pick what I want to talk about. One of these aspects comes from quieting the mind and asking for guidance. This is what some of the writers say. Well, you have to ask. If you don't ask, you know, your inner wisdom won't bother you. But if you ask, it will come. Ask for guidance in some problem or activity that doesn't seem that you can handle easily. This would be the situation in which you take time and ask for help, wait in a relaxed manner with the intention that you're going to get a solution. The other aspect is sort of inner wisdom on the fly, where you suddenly get a hunch or you hear the voice that says, you know, don't do that. That usually happens, you know, when you're involved in your work or in some social situation, for example, where you're not in a position to get into that consistent place and posture for quieting the mind and asking the question. And I think these are really the same kind of situation. They differ only in the way the information appears. I have these two backwards, and so I have to jump now and see if I can remember what I meant. I want to look at this aspect of inner wisdom, which the one that appears on the fly. This is truly a sensory experience. This is the one that often you feel it in your midsection, the one that people say is a gut feeling. Some writers talk about the fact that there seems to be what they call a gut brain. So there isn't a nervous system in your midsection that is reacting to these things. But that sensation can occur anywhere in the body or even in your imagination. One writer said that our intuition will never let us down. It is we who let it down by hearing only what we want to hear, failing to trust it fully, applying limiting logic, and not following through on the advice. But intuition is not infallible. Gut feelings can be unconsciously distorted by past experiences and unresolved emotions related to your past. Suppose that you are introduced to someone who has the same first name as a previous boyfriend or girlfriend. You immediately get a bad feeling in your midsection because you once experienced a terrible and failed relationship with that person of the same name. So you decide your intuition is warning you off from a friendship, which may be exactly the wrong thing. It's not your intuition warning you off. It's asking you to apply a little bit of compassion and a little logic and some more inner wisdom to the situation. As you receive information like this from your intuition, it may be useful to leap without wasting time in analysis. You might receive a feeling that you need to be especially careful at a street intersection, and thereby you avoid a collision with somebody that ran a stop sign. Keep your intention to attend to such feelings as they occur and practice following your instincts in situations. Now, this is the practice part. When you get a feeling that's not really a life and death situation, you know, something that you say, well, I don't think I ought to go there. And you can practice and not go there and then see what happens. On the other hand, if you get an intuitive thought that you should invest your month's salary in a certain investment that may be a little questionable, and then find out that it's all gone, that's leaping before you really looked. So, if you practice this thing in situations where it's less important, it will keep your intuition sharp, and you will habitually defer to it when those gut feelings occur. And I'm wondering if you all can jump in and say anything you want to. Have any of you had that kind of an experience where a thing just comes into your mind and you do it and it was wonderful? What kind of a thing? Somebody volunteer. Raymond.
Well, I had an experience with a place called Euro Disney. Mm-hmm. Everything that Disney had ever done was very good, but I think I invested about $14,000 in it, and I ended up getting, maybe $300 back. But that Euro Disney, I jumped at it because I thought that it would be like down here at, in Florida, but it didn't move. And I found out later,
I think I've had some of those too. Maybe some of our timeshare investments. But anyway, I see Faye. Well, that's taking advantage of your inner wisdom. I mean, you see you see a niche and you fill it. Richard? Oh, I got to call on Randy in a minute. Go ahead, Richard.
Much wisdom a lot of the spiritual traditions that are working in different locations, and there's a lot more emphasis on what you're talking about, inner wisdom, and of course through meditation and so many things like that. Yeah, you can come to my class. Through those kind of methods that are there, and it's starting to get into more of society. I'm not saying that every piece of creativity is valuable, but there is a lot more of those things going on, and inner wisdom, I think it's happening a lot more. That's my opinion.
Okay, all right. Who else was it? I had to call on Randy.
Sure, this is the right thing to do. And so that's one. But the other thing is many years ago, over 35 in fact, my wife and I had decided to separate, and I had gone down to visit the kids and came back, and I was really depressed because I realized there was no way I wanted to get back. And one of my friends said, "You need to be perked up. Let's go dancing." And I said, "Oh man, okay." Yeah. 35 years later, we're still together.
Well, that's good. And Henry.
January of 1991, I picked up the paper, and it was referring to, a little article referring to the total eclipse of the sun in Mexico in July 11th, 1991. And I have always, as a child, wanted to see a total eclipse of the sun. By the way, we get one in two, just under 2 years, right here. You want to be up as high as you can because it really enhances the whole thing. It'll be one of the events of your lifetime. And I was like, oh, I don't have any money. I got very little in the bank, blah, blah, blah. But this was a case where it was like a voice. It said, are you going to be sitting up here in California on July 11th saying, well, I didn't really want to fit a death hole. I had just enough money in the bank to buy a ticket for La Paz. I thought about I don't know, Hawaii or Mexico, because it's both places. But I'd like to work on the Spanish, and so I ended up in a small place between La Paz and Cabo San Lucas. If I hadn't gone to that eclipse, I don't know if I'd be here. Everything that happened since then, I knew I'd done three. Oh, this was one of the first times where I'd done three treatments at the church in Santa Rosa. And she would put out all the stuff, and more than you expected. Well, I was expecting to meet a witch down there, because I've done some work with channeling.
Inner wisdom. Well, part of inner wisdom is listening to your inner planet clock, too.
Yeah. Well, looking at this other aspect of inner wisdom, I'd first say that meditation is an excellent way to get to inner wisdom. Get comfortable, relax the body, and attend to your breathing. Breathing is an activity that always takes place in the present moment. If your mind wanders off on some irrelevant thought, or if the inner critic begins to scream, just be okay with that, but come back to watching your breath. Do some daydreaming. If you recognize the inner critic coming, don't fight it. Just turn back to watching the breath until you can recapture your daydream. Don't try to make anything happen. You can't do that anyway. Well, I guess you could try, but applying effort to get something done or cause some outcome will not let your inner wisdom come through. Be alert for the still small voice. May not come to you in words, but in images or emotions or bodily sensations. A very similar way of accessing your inner wisdom is through journal writing. Now, you knew I couldn't talk for more than 2 or 3 minutes without bringing that up. Though journaling isn't a substitute for regular meditation, it can easily be used as another form of meditation, particularly if you're trying to quiet your mind. If your thoughts just won't quiet down, write them down, and then you can put the journal aside and those thoughts go with it. If you've never had the experience of receiving intuitive guidance and want to try it out, or if you would like to develop your inner wisdom further, these methods are good ways to get into the habit of asking for help. Now remember that you need to ask. If you ask your guides or angels or just ask, you should get the help you want. Because you have free will, you don't have to engage with your spirit to improve your life. So your spirit may not always impose its guidance onto your experience if you don't ask for it consciously or unconsciously. Exercising your free will and requesting input is powerful and does make a difference. That's from Anna Sace, or Sacy, I don't know how you pronounce that. Did anybody know her online? Sayce. She's a woman who's a psychic and a writer who lives in New Zealand. Another technique, besides journaling, another technique you might have fun with is automatic meditative writing. Anybody tried automatic writing? I've never been able to really, you know, the journaling stuff that I do is not automatic, but it is stream of consciousness is what I'm trying to say. Automatic writing, the goal of that is to avoid these filters that we have in place or that have been installed in our consciousness by those parents, teachers, friends, or other persons that may have influenced your judgment in the past. Your normal meditation process, you can think about that as having three main parts. First, opening your mind to receive information and guidance. Second, thinking about and interpreting what you've received, and then documenting your interpretation in your journal. When you're doing automatic meditative writing, you can ignore that second part, which is to think about it and interpret it, and just write. Start out as you would with a regular journaling session. Sit comfortably, maybe in the same spot where you do your normal journal writing. Have a pad of paper in a place where you can reach it easily. Hold your pen or pencil lightly. And then it may be helpful to have a paper that's a little bit larger than your normal journal book. Now, this method really begins to differ from normal journal writing here. As you relax, you hold all that intention, hold the intention that the information you receive will go through your hand out onto the paper. And you might even want to make a few squiggles on the paper to get started. But then when you start writing, don't pay any attention. Just write. Some people close their eyes and write. And I don't know how they ever get to figure out what they wrote. But just write. Afterwards, read it if you can. And then try to interpret it. If you've never tried it, or if it hasn't worked very well as a standalone practice, give it a few tries, either in your regular journaling session or when you're going into your usual meditation practice. Other ways of contacting your sources of inner wisdom include creative visualization, channeling, pendulums, tarot cards, and similar cards such as those provided by Abraham Hicks or Doreen Virtue or Louise Hay. Practice is the key to developing the ability to access your inner wisdom. And like other things, the more you practice, the better you will become. That's about what I have on this. If anybody has some comments about the second aspect of accessing your inner wisdom, that is journaling, meditation, and these